Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. This is week 3 of the May 2024 Model Railroader magazine. Today, we will be reading the following articles: Step by Step, Create a Small Bridge Scene, and A Tribute to Jim Hettiger. Step by Step by Stephen Ott. Build a laser-cut wood structure kit. For the single rail-served factory on Model Railroader's 2024 project layout, the HO-scale Fremo Module Fremont Mills, I selected American Model Builders A.C. Brown Manufacturing Company, a laser-cut wood kit. I enjoy building wood structure kits, though I'll admit that I usually pick much smaller ones with many fewer windows. That step meant that building the structure that would become Stern and Childers Plumbing Supply took longer than I might have liked, but the techniques I used are useful no matter what size your structure. Follow along as I go through this build and see if you pick up any tips to help you on your next laser-cut wood structure kit. Step 1. Inventory and label parts. The first step in any kit is to familiarize yourself with the kit's contents. Make sure all parts listed in the instructions are present and undamaged. This kit's instructions are pretty thorough and include helpful diagrams identifying each part by number. Even so, it would be easy to lose track of which part was which after they were removed from their carrier sheets. So I took a moment to write the part numbers on the back of the major parts with a pen. This would help me not mix them up later. Step 2. Basic wall assembly. The first thing I did after taking the parts out of the box was to spray paint everything. Wood parts, especially large, thin sheets like the walls of this kit, can warp under the influence of water-based paints and stains. Spray paint, though, is solvent-based. It dries quickly and doesn't soak into wood as readily. As such, it doesn't cause as much warping. What little does happen can be corrected by adding strip wood braces to the interior. And painting the parts before assembly means no worries about sloppy brushwork on trim. I chose an earth tone paint for the walls, and white for the peel-and-stick doors, windows, and trim. Bare wood parts, like the deck and stairs, I would stain later. To assemble the kit, I used yellow carpenter's glue, or aliphatic resin. White glue would work, but I prefer wood glue because it's thicker, grabs quicker, and forms a waterproof bond, parentheses, which can be important if you plan to use water-based paint or alcohol-based stain, close parentheses. I reinforced the joints with strips of 1/8-inch square basswood and, after the basic box was complete, added more strips lengthwise across the walls to correct any warping. You may need to supply your own bracing material. After assembling the foundation, I glued the walls to it. Step 3. Cornice and wall cap trim. The Victorian-looking cornice on the loading dock side of the building is made of several wood strips and dozens of tiny laser-cut corbels. Since it was impossible to paint all visible surfaces to these parts while they were still in the carrier sheet, I assembled this trim piece unpainted. I used tweezers so I could see what I was doing while I positioned the corbels. Once the glue was dry, I spray-painted the assembled cornice white and glued it to the top of the wall along with two pieces of cap trim for the end walls. Step 4. Peel and stick windows and doors. The doors, windows, and trim are laser cut from a brown pressed fiber board similar to tempered hardboard. It's quite thin though, so it's still fragile. Use care when separating the parts from their carrier sheets or peeling the paper off the self-stick backing. It's easy to accidentally peel the adhesive off with the paper or even separate the layers of the fiberboard itself. If this happens, press the layers back together, and try again at a different corner. Build the windows in two sub-assemblies. Stick the window sash to the clear acrylic glazing, and adhere the narrow window sills to the bottom of the frames. Remember that the wider part of the window sash and frame is the bottom. The frames will self-stick to the walls, but the sashes must be glued in place. The doors are the same. The windows are designed to be installed either closed or open, so they fit a little loosely in the wall openings. If you're modeling them closed, apply a good amount of glue to the edges of the opening before inserting the window. Don't get any glue on your fingers or the glazing. If you want to install a window in the open position, stick the window frame on the wall first. Then apply a bit of glue on either side of the sash at the center, which is the pivot point. Insert the window into the opening sideways, then rotate it into position. Step 5. Trim, stairs, and loading dock. The loading dock doors are surrounded by frames of self-stick trim. I applied these to the wall first, then followed with the rest of the pre-painted corner trim. There are three sets of stairs, one long one to the second floor office door, and two short ones for the loading dock. The kit comes with a laser-cut jig to hold the stair risers in alignment while applying the self-stick treads. I reinforced the stairs by applying glue under the treads. The loading dock was straightforward. The hardest part was straightening the legs of the roof support, which was warped by the stain. I moistened it with alcohol to make it flexible before gluing it into the sockets in the decking. Step 6. Roofing and roof details. The roof is a single sheet of basswood, scribed with guidelines for adding the self-stick rolled roofing material. The roofing is white, so you have to paint it. Parentheses, I used a dark gray, end parentheses. Apply the strips of material from the bottom up. The roof has a lot of good-looking details that add interest to the model. In addition to three cast metal smoke jacks and two cast metal chimneys, there are also two skylights, a roof access stair, and a water tank that all need assembly. I stained the wood pieces before building the details. I had some difficulty with the water tank. The scribed micro-plywood siding that wraps around the framework isn't as flexible as I expected, and when I tried to bend it around the frame, it snapped at several of the scribes between boards. I recommend that while the siding is still flexible from the stain, wrap it around a paint bottle or other similarly sized cylinder and secure it with rubber bands to dry. That way, it will dry with a curve and won't break when you apply it to the tank frame. The skylights were a little tricky to assemble because the micro plywood sides are thin and have a small gluing surface. I added some 1/8-inch square strip wood blocks to brace the inside corners. Be sure you pay attention to which side of the skylight is taller than the other, since it will be glued to a sloped roof. I also added a ridge cap cut from a scrap of leftover self-stick material to the skylight frames to hide the joint. There are laser-cut openings in the roof for the chimneys, but not for the smoke jacks, so you're free to place those where you like. I glued a piece of scrap carrier sheet to the bottom of the roof before drilling holes for the smoke jacks. This would give them a more secure gluing surface. I glued strip wood under either side of the chimney sockets for the same reason. Step 7. Signs. The kit comes with a small sheet of full-color paper signs that you can cut out and apply to the building. Though I planned to change the name of the building when I came up with one I liked, at construction time I used the provided signs. I cut them from sheets with a sharp number 11 hobby blade and a metal straight edge, then applied them to the building with white glue. I didn't want any curling or peeling, so I used my finger to smear the glue along the back of the paper signs so it would spread thinly but evenly. Later, I measured the two signs with the building name, created replacements of the same sizes using a graphics program on my computer, then glued those printouts over the originals. Create a small bridge scene. Add big depth and variety to your layout with this small project. By Pell Soborg, photos by the author. One of the good things about moving is that sometimes you find things that you'd forgotten you had. During the move to a new apartment in the winter of 2023, I went through my stash of model railroad stuff and came across a little bridge kit from Scale Segmental Bridge Company. Unfortunately, the manufacturer went out of business years ago, but you can use any bridge kit for a scene like this. The kit represents a modern segmental concrete railroad bridge, and it fit nicely on my next module project. A scene like this doesn't take up much space, which makes it a perfect fit not only for modules, but will also be easy to implement on a permanent layout. My model railroad space is restricted to 8 feet, which is just enough space for 2.5 Freemo US, parentheses, the European version of Freemo, and parentheses, modules. I dedicated the half module to the bridge scene. This gave me a space of 1.97 feet, or 60 centimeters, by 1.64 feet, or 50 centimeters, to work with. Step 1. The bridge. What makes kits from Scale Segmental Bridge Company special is that the span sections, piling caps, and end walls are plaster castings, which give a concrete-like feel that is difficult to achieve with styrene. Before assembly, I gave the plaster castings a couple of dark gray washes. I airbrushed the pilings with dark brown. The stanchions for the wire handrails are made from styrene strips with nut bolt washer castings glued to them. I airbrushed them light gray. I glued the span sections together using cyanoacrylate adhesive, or CA. Finally, I attached the handrail stanchions to the span sections with CA. I used elastic string to simulate the wire handrail. Step 2. Terrain. Next, I installed the bridge on the module section. I glued a block of wood to the roadbed riser at each end of the bridge for the bridge end walls to rest on. I then glued a piece of foam insulation board to the transverse plywood sheets for the risers to rest on. While the glue was still wet, I adjusted the parts until the top of the roadbed on the bridge was level with the adjacent roadbed. I didn't glue the bridge at this point. After removing the bridge, I created the subterrain. Portable modules need to be as light as possible, so I used extruded foam insulation board for the subterrain. I began by shaping the creek. I continued applying foam pieces to the area. Using a hot wire cutter and a sharp knife, I roughly cut them to the desired shapes. Finally, I sanded the surface smooth. The different colors of foam insulation board have no particular meaning. I just used what I had available. Step 3. Bridge installation. The next step was to install the bridge. I glued the end walls to the wood blocks with white glue. I also used white glue to glue the piling sections to the foam insulation board. I didn't glue the bridge span to the piling or end walls yet. It's easier to apply the scenery under the bridge without the span section in place. I then filled all the gaps with lightweight filler that I sanded smooth after it had dried. Step 4. Texture. I brush painted the terrain with a layer of earth brown acrylic. Even though the painted area will be covered with scenery, this step is still needed. An earth-colored surface is much more forgiving than unpainted foam insulation board if there are spots where scenery doesn't cover completely. Once the paint had dried, I covered the creek bed with Arizona Rock and Mineral Light Tan Dirt 1020 and Industrial Dirt 1000 and sprinkled the area with various small rocks that I've collected from the walking paths in my local park. I drizzled the dirt and rocks with wet water, then I applied thinned white glue. I poured clear, solvent-free epoxy resin in the creek bed. I dyed the resin a bit by adding a few drops of Vallejo Sand Yellow 71.028 to it, but no more than that so it was still transparent. It took 2 coats of resin because some of the first pour was absorbed by the creek bed. I poured the second coat after the first coat had fully cured. I did things in a slightly different order than I usually do when I make rivers and streams. I used to apply all scenery materials along the creek before applying the resin, but I learned from experience that the resin would creep up the banks. So this time, I applied the resin first. That way, I can cover the glossy areas on the banks with a layer of dirt before I apply grass and weeds. I let the resin harden for a couple of days before touching up the glossy areas on the banks where the resin crept up. I also covered the dirt road with extra fine grain dirt. I first applied a thin layer of white glue and then sprinkled the area with a mix of 3 different shades of dirt: industrial dirt, low desert soil 1103, and light tan dirt. Step 5. Ground cover and track. I applied grass and weeds to the first quarter of my module using scenery products from Mini Nature, parentheses, MININATUR.DE/EN/, close parentheses. Lars Opthoff Scenery, parentheses, LARSOPTHOFSCENERY.NL/EN_GB/, close parentheses, and Polak, parentheses, POLAKMODEL.com, close parentheses. I first applied scenery glue to an area and then placed weeds and bushes randomly in the wet glue. Next, I applied static grass in various shades and lengths to the bare areas around the weeds and bushes using a knock applicator. I continued applying ground cover to the area under the bridge and along the other side of the track before I installed the bridge span. Finally, I applied a section of track to the module using Central Valley Model Works tie strips and Microengineering Code 83 rail. Before installing the track, I masked the top of the rail with tape and airbrushed the section with a coat of light gray. I received many questions about why I use track with wood ties on my modules and not concrete ties, since I model the present era. The explanation is simple. The European FREMO US module specifications stipulate that wood ties must be used because it must be possible to run different eras at the FREMO events. Step 6. Weathering and ballast. I needed to give the ties and rail some color. The ties received 3 washes. Their first 2 washes were Vallejo Game Brown, 72.745, diluted with Vallejo Thinner and water added to the color in a 3:2:2 ratio. The third was a Vallejo Black Wash, 76.517, and water in a 1:1 ratio. I wanted an old, sun-bleached look for the ties. Each rail and tie plates were painted with Vallejo Game Earth, 72.062, mixed with Vallejo Model Air Rust, 71.080, in a 1:1 ratio. Finally, I airbrushed the track with Vallejo Matte Varnish to seal the washes and kill any shine. It doesn't matter exactly which shades of color you use. Most gray-brown shades will do the job. I've used other colors for tracks on other modules and layouts, but these were what I happened to have on the shelf. I ballasted the track in several steps. I'd already applied a base layer of ballast when I applied the ground cover. For that, I mixed some brown and gray ballast together. The mainline ballast is the Arizona Rock and Mineral Union Pacific Blend 1352. I applied the ballast as evenly as possible and used a soft, wide brush to spread it out. I then tapped the top of the rails with the brush handle to knock any remaining ballast grains off the ties. To break the surface tension of the ballast, I applied wet water, parentheses, water with a few drops of dish detergent added, close parentheses. Once the ballast was soaked, I applied white glue thinned 1:1 with water. Finally, I added grass and weeds to the area that hadn't been covered before I laid the track. There's no deeper reason why I didn't cover the entire module section with grass and weeds before laying and ballasting the track. Step 7. Trees. The final task was to make trees and bushes for the scene. I used a natural product from Hecky, a dried seedweed of some kind, which is similar to Super Trees from Scenic Express. I made each tree from several pieces glued together using hot glue. The color of the product isn't very tree-like, so I airbrushed the armatures with a warm gray color. Then I dipped the trees in white glue thinned with water and sprinkled them with leaves from Nock. With the trees in place, the module is almost complete. I might change the location of a tree or two and plant an extra bush somewhere if it looks better in close-up photos. I'll also apply a dark gray fascia to the module when all 3 modules have been finished. A tribute to Jim Hediger. He was a member of the Model Railroader staff for 43 years. By Cody Grivno. Photos from the Jim Hediger Collection. Jim Hediger, a member of the Model Railroader staff from 1972 to 2015, passed away on February 9th, 2024. Here is a look back at Jim's early years in the hobby and some of the many highlights of his 43-year career at Kalmbach Publishing Company, now Kalmbach Media. Early years. Jim was born in Chicago to Norm and Eleanor Hediger. While in the Windy City, his father worked for the Grand Trunk Western. When Jim was 13, his family moved to Dearborn, Michigan. There, his parents worked in the Detroit, Toledo, and Ironton's general offices. In junior high school, Jim built his first HO scale layout, the 5x9-foot NJ&E Railroad, Norm, Jim, and Eleanor Railroad. The model railroad was inspired by, quote, layout in a fortnight, end quote, an article published in the December 1951 issue of Model Railroader. Jim and his father modified the plan to use Atlas snap switches and flex track. They also added a compact yard along the front edge of the layout. Quote, corralling my youthful enthusiasm and teaching me to be patient and build things correctly from the beginning had to be a real trial for my dad, as I always tried to rush everything, end quote, Jim wrote in the December 2000 Model Railroader. Quote, even so, he patiently helped me add the grade and upper level and lay track. Dad installed the wiring, including the track diagram board that showed turnout positions. Building the trains, scenery, and structures was my job, end quote. After enjoying the NJ&E for several years, Jim began work on the HO scale Detroit Western Railroad. The new model railroad had 36-inch minimum radius curves, number 6 turnouts, and an operating pit. Quote, the DW layout was significant for several reasons, end quote, Jim wrote in the July 1978 Model Railroader. Quote, first, it was my initial point-to-point layout. Open parentheses, it did have a double-track loop in it to represent other railroads. Close parentheses. Second, the DW included my first attempts at using interchange as a means of receiving and dispatching traffic from offline points. Third, it was my first real attempt to model a portion of a real railroad. The result was a layout that was patterned after the prototype Detroit, Toledo, and Ironton Railroad and its operation in the Detroit area. End quote. The short trains on the layout were powered by Electromotive Division GP7 and GP9 diesel locomotives. During Jim's years in Dearborn, he spent a decade working part-time at the hobby shop in his backyard. Quote, Emery Goulash owned Star Hobbies and Bill McGuire was its manager, end quote, Jim wrote in the November 2015 Model Railroader. Quote, both were excellent modelers who encouraged my HO scale modeling. They also introduced me to realistic layout operations as a junior member of the O-scale Detroit Model Railroad Club, end quote. Jim also worked as a telegraph operator for the Wabash Railroad for one summer. Following high school, Jim attended Wayne State University, graduating with a bachelor's degree in industrial education. Jim then taught high school graphic arts, printing, machine shop, and wood shop in the Dearborn School District. He later earned a master's degree in industrial education from Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti. Reaching out. While Jim was reading a 1972 issue of Model Railroader, he noted that only a small group of employees at Kalmbach's 1027 North 7th Street headquarters was producing the rapidly growing monthly publication. Quote, I picked up that things were going on behind the scenes to get the magazine out, end quote, Jim wrote in the January 2019 Model Railroader. Quote, I wrote to Lynn Westcott in the middle of May 1972 to inquire if he needed help. About 3 days later, I got a telephone call wanting to know how fast I could get to Milwaukee to visit the Kalmbach offices. This happened right at the end of the school year. I completed my teaching contract with the Dearborn School District before I moved to the Milwaukee area in the summer of 1972, end quote. Jim joined the Model Railroader staff as an associate editor, becoming Kalmbach Publishing employee number 62. Quote, my work with Lynn Westcott began with an unforgettable comment that I followed throughout my career. Never be afraid to try a new idea. Even if something doesn't work, you've still learned something valuable from it. End quote, Jim wrote in the November 2015 issue of Model Railroader. In the fall 2015 Proof, Kalmbach's employee newsletter, Jim recalled attending his first National Model Railroad Association convention with Westcott. Quote, Lynn introduced me to nearly everyone in sight, including manufacturers, his friends, and the hobby's best-known authors. The rest of the week was a whirlwind of home layout visits, tours, and clinics where expert modelers shared their latest ideas. Everyone introduced himself and shook hands warmly, as if we'd known each other for years. Amazingly, this friendly attitude and sharing of model railroad information has never changed during many, many years on the model railroader staff. End quote. During his 43-year career, Jim, or JDH, as he was known to colleagues, traveled throughout the world. He represented Model Railroader at industry events such as the Nuremberg, Germany, Toy Fair, and Hobby Expo, toured the factories of several major hobby manufacturers, and presented clinics at NMRA events. Jim was the keynote speaker at the NMRA's 75th anniversary banquet, held in Milwaukee in July 2010. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader Magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@aftersight.org. Thank you for listening.